right, Suzanne, recordings are rolling. KY6V.
Good evening, everyone. This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This TNT Open Forum is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. The SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. This TNT net is conducted to provide information pertinent to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your moderator for this session is N1SUZ. My name is Suzanne, and I am located in Danbury, Connecticut. Okay, with that said, let's start our TNT presentation for the evening. I want to welcome everyone to our TNT presentation tonight, which is a special one, hosted by Gordon, KY6V, our resident expert on antennas. Our topic tonight is HF, VHF, and UHF antennas. KY6V will share with us his expertise and cover analyzing your antenna needs and what you want to accomplish, how VHF and UHF antennas should be considered as opposed to HF, coax considerations, height considerations, how to read your SWR correctly, lightning considerations, and most importantly, safety. So, without further ado, let me welcome Gordon, KY6V, aboard to teach us about antennas. And remember, Gordon is the expert and will be answering any questions you may have. Gordon, KY6V, welcome aboard.
Well, I'm not sure about that expert nomenclature, but we'll give it our best. Susie, good evening to you. Good evening to everybody that's connected. And it looks like we've got a good group for a start off and kickoff here this evening. As Suzanne has indicated, we're going to be talking about antennas and a lot of things to think about in what type of antenna to maybe put up at your location, what you really want to accomplish with that particular antenna, what band you're going to be running it on, so on and so forth. If time permits, we'll get into mobile antennas also, and we'll just have some fun here this evening. I will say, Suzanne, that I was watching the tropical weather unfold just before you got started here, and we're playing with three configurations out there, two in the Atlantic, one in the Gulf. We've got a Katia at 85 miles an hour, which is a Cat 1. We've got a Maria at 40 miles an hour, headed towards the States at the moment, but I think that's going to bend. And we've got a Nate out in the Gulf. And that rascal is currently a tropical storm, but it's at 70 miles an hour and about 4 more miles of wind velocity. It's going to be a Cat 1. So I'm, Katia, Maria, and Nate, I'm looking for the Pinto and the Santa Maria to come around the corner next. All right, let me buy a nickel here, get everybody's timers charged, and we'll get started. All right, this is Gordon, KY6V, and this is South Cars TNT Thursday Evening Open Forum. We're going to be talking about antennas tonight, HF, VHF, and UHF antennas. Going to start off with sort of a broad brush here and look at analyzing your needs and what you want to accomplish. And first, as a general rule, please remember that one of the most popular and very effective antennas is the half-wave dipole. If you're considering the upper HF band, such as 20 meters through, let's say, 10, you may wish to consider a rotatable beam antenna. Although the dipole works fine at these frequencies, the beam gives you much more gain and signal strength along with a front-to-back selectivity. So before we go and get deeper and deeper here, Suzanne, I understand, if I'm not mistaken, that you guys up there in Connecticut are thinking about maybe some additional antennas. Do you have any thoughts on what you're going after, or do you have any questions before we get started? Over.
Well, thank you, Gordon. This is N1SUZ. As a matter of fact, we are considering having a different antenna up here. And we have a small lot. And maybe you can tell me what I should consider for an antenna with a small lot, such as should we get a loaded antenna, inverted V, or something like that? Be really interested in your thoughts, because we don't have a lot of room here, but I want to get onto those 20 through 10 meter bands. So back to you, Gordon, if you can help me out.
Well, the first key that you gave me, Susie, if you want to particularly spend most of your time on 20 through 10, you know, you're talking some short antennas as opposed to 40 and 75 in overall length. So you've got an advantage to start with. You know, I have to say that everything is a compromise that is under a full-size antenna, at least one-half wave and above ground and further not folded or bent from a pure horizontal plane. Of course, this statement, you know, precludes vertical antennas, which is a horse of its own color. Loaded antennas use a combination of inductance and capacitance to resonate the overall system to something less than a full wave. And, you know, in doing so, the full radiation is limited by the insertion of this device. In the case of an inverted V, if you're thinking of going that way, if the angle of the slope is not made to be any tighter than about 120 degrees, this antenna will function rather well. But its pattern of radiation will be altered and will not compare in overall performance to a straight dipole, but nevertheless very usable. So are there any other questions on that before we proceed with the next category, please? This is KY6V, and this is the TNT. All right. The next note that I had in the agenda here was HF consideration and what bands you plan to work. Now, you know, Suzanne just touched on she wants to concentrate on 20 through 10, possibly. You know, a quarter wave on 10 meters is only 8 feet, so a half wave is 16, 32 feet across for that antenna for 20 meters. You can normally sandwich that way, you know, even in a small lot, if you're lucky. But by knowing this information, what bands you're going to work, will narrow your selection of antennas that you might choose from. But bear in mind that your best choice is an antenna cut and resonant at your preferred operating frequency. Any questions about that statement, please? KY6V, and this is the TNT. Okay. I see that Jim is aboard here. Jim, you got a microphone that's working up there this evening? Good evening, sir. Weren't you about to put up some antennas at your location, Jim? WKD, please. Over.
Well, yes, sir. Thank you, Gordon. And by the way, thank you for doing this tonight. I am recording myself, and this is one that is very, very interesting to me, not only for my own antennas. It's just a subject, like Susie, I want to, I'm drawn to antennas, and I want to learn as much as I can. But in my location, I am very, very restricted to space. I do have a G5RV Junior up there, but I was thinking that I might want to do a vertical. So my question to you, sir, would be how would a vertical compare to horizontal antenna? And would that work for me? And what considerations could I should I keep in mind if I go that route? Over.
That's a great question, Jim. Thank you. And again, good evening. Gordon here, KY6V. Well, you know, when you start talking about verticals, there's some things to think about, Jim. So the answer is maybe yes and maybe no on its workability, if there's such a word. We're talking HF operation here, of course. And this depends on your ground conductivity, whether or not you are using ground radials, which I very much recommend, and so on. Remember that a vertical antenna on HF produces a very low angle of radiation, and therefore is very good for DX operation, but does not operate well for short skip type conditions. Let me tell you what we're facing down here, Jim. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the state of Florida is a sand dune, probably laying over coral. Its ground conductivity is for the birds. I have never known anybody that has put up an all-band vertical here in the state of Florida that was happy with it, unless they went to a large amount of trouble of putting out radials for each one of the bands that that antenna supported. And then on top of that, you want to make sure that those radials are buried so that the lawnmower blades don't pick them up when you're trying to cut your grass, or it really ruins your day. Did that sort of answer your question, Jim?
Well, yes, it did, sir. And the truth is that we've talked about this before. I consulted with you before. And when I was looking at a vertical, and you didn't mention, I don't think you mentioned that the length of those ground radials, you have to consider that. So that pretty much might preclude, in my case, a vertical, because wherever I put it, I'm still limited in space for the radials. So there we go. So I'll turn it back to you and let you proceed. But yes, that answered my question, sir, and thank you.
All right, thank you. I saw the text box. Ted, I'll be right with you, sir. Well, think about what you're facing. You know, if this vertical, Jim's going to run all bands, let's say 75 and up, you want quarter-wave verticals coming out from the base of that antenna. So quarter-wave at 75 is 60 feet. So your longest radials are going to be 60 feet long. And then 30 feet at 40, and, you know, as it goes up towards 10 meters. So you've got an awful lot of wire that's plunked in the ground if you're going to do it correctly. Ted, good evening to you, sir. Comments on Florida verticals. Would that be on your motorhome, sir? LOU from KY6V. Over. All right. Terrence, I see you in the text box, too, sir. Please stand by. Ted, no audio on that one. Give it a kick. Try it again, please. Over. Apparently you're having some problems up there, Ted. WB2LOU. I'll come back to you shortly. Let me go ahead and pick up Terrence, give you a chance to checky-checky on your end. The Louisville Slugger, top of the evening, sir. Go ahead.
And good evening to you, Gordon. I'm glad you're covering this this block construction, because this is the subject of the century here. I tell you, I love the concept of antennas. Tell you what I'm working now, Gordon. I'm working a MFJ 1622. It's a window mount antenna. And I have it actually mounted. It's screwed on to my picnic table or patio table out on the patio. And I have made a lot of contacts with this antenna on 20 meters. Okay, I went as far as Hawaii on it, and it's killing me. I'm like, wow. But the thing is, I think that antenna basically is rated for 10 to 40 meters. And but I also have a G5RV. And the question is, I'm interested in running pretty much almost all the meters except the 160 and the 80. I'm not interested in those bands. But I am interested in the 12, 15, 17, and 20 meters and 40 meters and also 30 meters. But I don't have any room for the G5RV. Now, I can't really put it up in a tree because there's no trees where I'm at. It's crazy, the construction. And it's just temporarily anyway. We're only going to be here temporarily. But if I was to take this one particular antenna, this dipole, and kind of like zigzag it both sides, maybe about 5 feet off the ground, would I still be able to get contacts with this antenna, or do it necessarily need to be up in the air, extended, you know, from side to side over?
Well, if I'm reading you correctly here, Terrence, you're talking about maybe folding that into an inverted V. Some structure in the center that gets you up to some altitude, 25 or 30 feet, we would hope, if not more. And then you would stretch those out on whatever property available that you've got and end up, you say, about 5 feet above ground. If I'm reading this correctly, an inverted V would be the proper name that I'm thinking of at the moment. That'll work okay for you. It will not outshoot a high-playing, you know, stretched-out dipole, but it will work very well, and you have a lot of fun with it. Now, the G5RV that you have, sir, is that the 75 through 10 meters? You know, they have two versions. One is 102 feet in length. That's the 75 up through 10. And then they have a junior model that's about 60 feet long, roughly. And it works 40 meters up through 10. Which one have you got, sir? Over.
This is not, it's not the junior. It's the one that'll go up to 80 meters, I believe. I think it covers 80 meters, 10 to 80. Over.
Okay. Do you have some way to hang that thing so that the apex, the center part of the antenna, will be up at some altitude? And then you can just string the lines out to wherever you can without the neighbors shooting you on sight, over?
That's a concern. And to answer your question, not really, because it's not really what you would call a stealthy-type antenna. Now, on the other hand, the MFJ-1622 is, I'll be honest with you, it's doing a good job for what it was designed to do. I think I'm going to have to wait until the end of this year, which is only a few months off, before we move into a house, actually buying a beautiful house here in this area. But so that's the dilemma there. I think I'm just going to wait on the G5RV. Now, question two, with the G5RV, in terms of a beam, is always going to be a better antenna from what I understand, you know, because you're going to get the dB gain, you're going to have the the signal going to the front and also to the back, or whatever way it is. I mean, I'm going to have a front door and rejection to the sides, but G5RV, is it really, you know, how does it compare to a beam type antenna? I mean, can it stand, you know, toe to toe with a beam? And that may not be the right term, but you know, how effective is a beam as far as how effective is the G5RV as far as the dB gain versus a beam type antenna? Back to you, Gordon.
Well, there's no comparison at all, Terrence. KY6V here for TNT. First of all, do not consider the G5RV, which is a multi-band antenna, anywhere close to a beam. Consider it close to a dipole, a standard cut resonant dipole. It does not really exhibit gain. It's got a particular pattern, just like your 1622 does. But once you use the parasitic elements, and we're going to be getting into this in this discussion tonight on beams, parasitic elements with driven elements and a reflector and a driven element and directors is what I was trying to say, focuses all of that energy off the front end of that baby. And you can get upwards of 8 dB, and if you're on VHF with 15 elements, you could probably get 15 dB gain over a dipole. And again, we're going to be touching on this as we get into the program, but if you stop and think, Terrence, that 3 dB is doubling your power, 3 dB is also 1S unit on your unit on your receiver, and we're talking 8, 13, 15 dB, you know, the dipole can't catch it, and neither can your G5RV. How big is your attic, sir? Over.
It's, you know, the attic is not accessible here. Trust me, just I didn't think when I moved here that I was going to be doing any type of ham transmitting or anything like that. It wasn't even on the radar. So, and we've only been here for a little while, but it's not even accessible. And again, I can't wait to move. It's going to happen very soon there, Roger.
I hear you. I always laugh when I think about the conversation that we had on one of these nets with Kathy and her gated community. You can't even go outside and spit on the sidewalk without being reprimanded. And my, she says, what should I do for antennas? I said, move. Let me see if Ted got back with us, Terrence, and we'll get back with you as the program rolls along here. WB2LOU, I see you on the user list. Are we ready to talk up there, Ted? Over.
Yeah, is this got some audio now?
Oh, you just sound like the governor of Pennsylvania. Go right ahead, Ted.
Well, the governor of Pennsylvania is kind of busy bailing out the city of Wilkesboro. They're getting flooded tonight. They're in really bad shape from the Susquehanna River. Anyway, good evening, everybody. KY6V, this is WB12EU. Just want to make a few quick comments about the situation in Florida, and it may sound strange to some folks, being that I'm from Pennsylvania, but I've operated as a ham in Florida during the winter time for the past 6 years or so, maybe seven now, and each time it's been a little bit of a challenge, except the last 2 years has been very good to me. And you have to understand, I'm a motorhome guy, so I'm on a restricted lot. I don't have much space. The motorhome's 35 feet long, and I don't have much room in the back. Anyway, I have this screwdriver antenna, which is a vertical quarter-wave antenna. It's motorized. I can make it tune through the bands 6 meters all the way through 80 without much problem. But when I first put it up on the motorhome, didn't work worth a hoot. Couldn't talk to anybody, heard a lot of noise, didn't really work out very well. So I took it off the motorhome and I ground mounted it. And I used 6 or 8 ground radials coming out from the base, and that improved the performance of that antenna something terrible. I mean, it was just absolutely fantastic. And the first time, I'm going to drop it just a minute, the first time I fired that baby up, and mine, I'm only running about 50 watts or so with a small transceiver, my first contact from Central Florida was a guy in Russia. And he gave me a S9 plus 10 over. Now, propagation, of course, had a lot to do with that, but I was really surprised. And the following year, I did the same thing, and I did a lot of DXing. I probably worked 100 different stations in Europe. and the East and so forth down in Africa than more so than I did any of the U.S. stations that I heard. It was performing really wonderful. Last year, I actually used a ground system made up of tape measures. I have 6 tape measures for my ground plane on that antenna. I wrote an article, it appears in EHAM, and I have photographs of the hookup. If anybody wants to see what was going on, I'll be glad to send them to them if they send me an email. Back to you, Gordon, KY6WB2LW.
Very good and very interesting. Hi, Sierra, I think you said, maybe. That antenna is basically a stinger with a base loading coil, right? And then the base loading coil is electrically movable, so you can do it from a remote location and get it on the band and tap that you want. How long was your longest tape measure, sir? Over.
Gordon, I forgot to mention that. 16 feet. They were all 16 feet long.
That's interesting. And was it playing for you nicely down on 75 and 40?
Well, with the ability to change the coil remotely from inside the motorhome, I was able to get a 1-to-1 SWR on every frequency I chose, whether that was 75-meter phone or 10 meters. I was able to get a good SWR or match that way. I did not have a tuner at all. I don't have a tuner in the motorhome. It's just I just adjust that coil remotely.
Yeah, okay. All right, I was just wondering if you talked a little bit on 75 and, you know, how your reports were coming in. I can see the 16, particularly from 20 up through 10 meters. 16's a quarter wave on 20. That's what you want. A half wave on 10. So, you know, that's ideal, don't you think, Ted? Over.
Oh, yes. That's why I chose that length. I work mostly 20 meters, but I also worked 40, and I had quite a few contacts on 80 late in the evening. I was talking to some friends in New York on 80 meters without any problems at all.
Yeah, that's very good. All right, well, let me move it on here, Ted, and thank you very much for that input. I was hoping that we would be able to get into some mobile antennas, and you've opened the door for that, so we'll see how the program timing goes and whether we'll be able to give it justice here tonight. The next question or note that I have on the programming was to discuss monoband and multiband antenna considerations, guys and gals. And I guess it's probably time to say this is KY6V. I'm down here in South Florida, Central Florida, actually, and this is the Thursday night evening TNT discussion tonight on antennas. As far as monoband and multiband, although a monoband antenna, you know, has been proven to work the best, many multiband antennas will work very well also. They will not perform on the higher HF bands as well as a beam antenna. We got into that earlier. But as a second antenna or your only choice at the moment, will perform satisfactorily for you. The choices out there are many. You know, there's trapped antennas, there's ZEP-type designed antennas, there's G5RVs that Terrence and I were just talking about, along with long-wire antennas cut to half-wave increments, and so on it goes. This really comes down to the room that you have for your antenna construction, and the ability to get hanging this baby up in the air. We haven't heard from Kathy yet this evening. Kathy, are you with us? Did you survive school today? Understand that you're starting to get some antennas going down at your place. Any questions from your side, please? Over.
This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and actually before I ask you the question about multiband, I'd like to go back to your first couple of questions about space in the lot. And you know as well as a lot of people know that I live in a gated community. I have a small lot, probably smaller than yours, Suzanne. And I have a fairly large house, but the only place right now I can think of putting an antenna is up in the attic. And a lot of what Gordon has said is to move. A lot of what I think Jim said to move. But that's not an option right now. So, yes, I am in the process of getting something up in my attic. But could you maybe, before I go on, go back to those couple of questions and tell me maybe what you think a good idea of putting something in my attic. I have very limited space. I have a very large home, but it's all in the attic, and it's crawling on top of 2x4s and whatever in the attic, and it's very hot up there. You know South Florida, very hot unless you get up during the day, which is a problem for me since I work. So maybe you'd like to maybe just give me some ideas besides moving, of course, and besides putting up a flagpole. So maybe you can give me some suggestions for my attic before I ask you the question I'd like to ask you. Over to you, KY6B from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Well, I think we touched on some of this not too long ago, Kathy, as I recall. KY6V here with K6SUN and the TNT. You know, if you have adequate room in the attic to walk around, even if you have to walk on the 2x4s, watch your step. I've been there and done that. If you're not careful, you come right through the sheetrock and make one heck of a mess and get everybody upset with you. And with yourself if you come all the way through. A dipole up in the attic would work great if you have enough attic space, even if you have to bend the ends a little bit. G5RV for multiband operation. I assume you say you have a large house, but I don't think it's 120 feet long, which is what you would require, well, 102 for a G5RV for 75 and up. But you could get a G5RV Junior, which is about 60 feet overall, strung in your attic, I would think, even if you had to bend the ends a little bit, Kathy, over.
All right, thank you for that. It's not, my house is fairly large, but I don't have a big lot like Suzanne was talking about, but my home is, I think, over 2,000 square feet. But I laugh with George's comment in the text box, maybe I need to be a mouse. Maybe if I was a mouse, I could just take everything up there. But it's a little difficult right now for me to get up into that attic, high enough ladder, but I'm working on it. So let me ask you the next question so we don't tie up this evening's nap. Why are multiband antennas less effective than a standard resonant dipole? And once again, anyone that's listening, why are multiband antennas less effective than a standard resonant dipole? Maybe you can give us some clues to that. Over to you, KY6V.
Well, I don't know how to answer that one, Kathy. That's a good question. You know, everything downstream from a resonant, properly cut, proper length antenna is a compromise. Multiband antennas are a compromise. And to answer your question, it depends on the type of multiband antenna you're using. In all cases, they are inferior to some degree from a standard type antenna. The trap type antennas are probably the most effective, and this is due to the fact that they do not reduce the overall length of the antenna much. The loaded type, which uses inductance and capacitance to gain resonance, reduces the overall length of the antenna and reduces its efficiency at the same time. Those that work on the second, third, and fourth harmonic principle are adequate. but cannot perform as well as a band-specific cut antenna. And we keep coming back to the G5RV. You know, antennas such as the G5RV and the like vary so drastically in impedance that an antenna tuner is necessary to compromise for the great impedance changes that exist from that band to band. But they will put some RF into the ether, and they will work very, very well. So it depends on how important it is for you to get on the air, number one. Number two, to have a decent signal, if not the loudest signal out there. And just get on with what you can get on with. Does that answer your question, Kathy? Over.
Yes, Gordon, KY6B, thank you so much. Maybe someone else out there has a question they'd like to ask you, but you answered mine. And I'll turn it back to you. And thanks so much. You're doing a grand program as usual. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Back to you, KY6B.
All right. Thank you very much, Kathy. Appreciate you being here tonight. You didn't tell everybody, did you come away from school unscathed today, or did the rascals get you? Over.
I forgot to tell you that. Actually, my kids are just excellent. I have maybe four students that give me a problem, but they're excellent. But I was at the after-school extended day, which I do on usually Mondays and Wednesdays, but I've been asked to do it most of the days this week, so I got home about 6:45. But the day's going very well. Tomorrow's an early release day, and my principal told me to please leave early because I put so much time in, so I'm looking forward to that. But kids are great. Year is great so far, and I'm looking forward to the weekend coming up. Hope that answers your question, KY6B. Back to you.
All right. Well, glad that you're with us, and hail and hearty, Kathy. Thank you. Guys and gals, I'm going to move this into the next footnote here that I have, and that's optimizing your fixed antenna field intensity. Let me read that again. Optimizing your fixed antenna field intensity. And George, I see that you're with us tonight. I hope you're close to your computer. You've been doing an awful lot of antenna fiddling around and placing it in the right direction. You may want to come aboard as we get a little deeper in this portion. But I'd like to start out by saying that in the case of a beam, this requirement is automatic. You know, you rotate the beam to where you want it, and it's all said and done. But in the case of a dipole or a multiband antenna, this becomes a consideration that you should think about. In the case of the dipole or the multiband, remember that the maximum radiation comes from the sides of the antenna. This means, for example, if you are located in the middle of the United States and you wish to work both the west coast and the east coast of the states, your antenna should be oriented north and south. You don't point the wire at where you want to go with these type of antennas. You point the wire opposite, so that the broadside portion of the antenna, the length of the antenna, is facing where you want it to go. So the longer they are as to wavelength, and I'm talking long wires here for a moment, the more the signal is focused to the end of the antenna. So a multiband antenna can be just a single wire stretched out long enough where you have the length is equal to multiple half waves. And the longer it gets, the more it will concentrate its energy off the end of the wire. So in that case, and if you have a particular geographical location that you want to work primarily, make sure that that long wire, if that's what you're using for a multiband antenna, is squirting and looking in that direction. George, do you have any input on the fun that you've been having up there recently? And any questions on your side, sir? KW4LCB from KY6V and the TNT.
Well, good morning, afternoon or evening, Gordon. I don't know what day it is, the time it is, but I'm here. KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo. Well, you know, I'm been playing with wire antennas now a little while there, but maybe you could explain to me a little bit more just how and where you know the gain starts to or just how does it show its gain, you know, and just why is it that I got to point it in the opposite direction to get a good a received signal. Maybe you could go into that a little bit more there, if you don't mind, sir. KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo.
All right, thank you, George, and good evening to you, sir. KY6V here for the TNT. Well, I think we have some things to clear up first. Directivity is one thing, gain is another. The actual pattern of an antenna can be determined by a lot of means, but a lot of that work has been done for you. You can search a particular antenna and get a pattern display of what it would normally produce. On a dipole, George and guys and gals, if you drew out a horizontal line on a piece of paper and then drew a circle around with that line in the middle, you would find that and the ends of the circle, you know, go to the ends of the antenna on this drawing, would show you that the maximum signal strength produced by a dipole is off the sides of its antenna. And if you ran a dB chart on that drawing that you just made, you will find that as the antenna reaches its ends, where the insulators are that hold this baby up, the signal that's being radiated is about half of what is coming off the sides of that antenna. It's 3 dB down. So what I'm saying here, if you're using a dipole or if you're using a multiband antenna who normally has this same characteristic pattern, you want that antenna broadside to the areas that you're interested in working. And my example was that if you were in the middle of the United States, you want to be broadside to California and broadside to New York, and you'll work just about everybody in between. Your Canadian contacts on this installation will be workable, but your power level and effectivity will not be as great. It'll be half of what it was if you had the broadside looking up to Canada, in the same way, you know, down into Mexico and parts of South America. Let me buy a nickel here a moment. And then again, I think we talked about long wires a little bit too, George, but a long wire, again, the longer it is in wavelengths, the more it produces, in this case, gain. It's taken all of this peripheral RF that it was spitting out on the sides of this wire and narrows it, channels it, makes it parallel to the wire, spits it out at the end of the wire, and gives you gain. Now, gain is referred to in a number of ways. Reference to an isotropic antenna, which is a magical antenna up in the sky. DBD is reference to a dipole. And that's where the standard is. A DBD, a dipole, is considered a non-gain antenna. And then when you start getting gain over a dipole, is when you start looking at things like beams and so on and so forth. Does that make any sense, George? Over.
Yes, sir. And I had a follow-up question just to make sure I'm tracking right here. As you know, you mentioned earlier, as far as north and south or east or west, no matter where you want to transmit or receive at, but what I'm hearing is since the maximum point is at the feed point, you more or less would want to have your direction more or less flowing right off at that, more or less at that feed point to give you the maximum. You know, like I said, you basically are your antenna is laid out going in one direction, north or south or east or west, but to get the best gain into the area that you want to talk to, if you slightly pull it to the east or to the west or to the north or to the south, which will more or less give you your best signal strength there. Am I understanding that right?
Well, I think so, George, but I don't like the connotation of the center point or feed point of the antenna. That's not it. The lobe of radiation exists off the side of a dipole or off the side of your G5RV that you're running right now. And that lobe starts at the end insulator and works out along the broadside side of that antenna, rounds off just about at center, which is your feed point that you're talking about, and then bends itself back down to the opposite insulator on the overall length of the antenna. And the same thing on the other side. Both sides. I don't care. You can, you know, turn the darn thing 180 degrees around. It won't make any difference. But your main power is being excurted out into the ether off the broad side of that antenna. So, if you want to put a blistering signal into Canada, turn that baby broadside to Canada. If you want to work California and New York, put it broadside to both points. Over.
Well, thank you, sir. You kind of answered my question there and cleared it up. And, well, what can I say? I think the best bang for the buck is a dipole antenna there. As you know, I fooled with quite a few of them, and I think I'll stick with my wires. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo, back to you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you being here tonight, George. Thank you. That was KW4 LCB. I see a couple of comments in the text box. I'm not watching that text box very closely, so I hope I'm not missing anybody. But I see Art ACC has a comment. And also, Jim, Art, stand by up there in the New York area. Let me pick up North Carolina, and we'll be right with you. WKD, please, KY6V, over.
Thanks, Gordon. I appreciate you picking up my recheck. And let me identify KJ4WKD. I apologize for not doing that earlier. I must have had something else in my mind. A couple of things. I'd like to recommend to Kathy, or not necessarily recommend, based on your comments, Gordon, a slinky dipole, which is my understanding that will work at 30 feet in total length. Certainly through 40 meters, and again, that's my understanding. I have one. It received really well. I never transmitted on it, so I don't have a lot of experience with it, but it's a great attic antenna if you have at least 30 feet to extend those slinkies. And my real question is to follow up to back from the beginning, and I don't mean to extend the net or get off the subject, But I heard Terrence say that he had a what sounded like a mobile antenna attached to a picnic table on his patio. And I think of picnic tables as being wood, and I'm wondering whether or not he actually has a counterpoise there. So, Terrence or Gordon, that question, and I know that Terrence is working Hawaii and doing really well on that antenna, so I'm a little baffled about that with if he does not have a counterpoise on that, what essentially I think I heard, a vertical mobile. Back to you, KY6C. This is KJ4WKD.
Yeah, you had me laughing a little bit, Jim. KY6V here. I've worked with those slinky antennas before. And when you hang them up in the attic, you know, try to stay on the 2x4 so you don't come through the sheetrock and keep the slinky from really getting out of control. I mean, you've got your hands full. Terrence, you want to answer Jim on this? I was going to ask you the same thing. You know, what are you using for a counterpoise on that picnic table? But when you said you were working everybody in the Hawaiian Islands to boot, I said, well, I'm not going to ask him. He doesn't need it. Terrence, over.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll tell you what I'm using. It actually came with a counterpoise. It's a long wire. And depending on what band you're actually working, it depends. That's how long you want to actually run the wire. Now, what I would do is I would just go down to about maybe 5 watts on the radio and switch over to my SWR meter, and I would just, you know, I would go by the diagram first of all, and whatever band I want to work. And I've been working the 20-meter band because I've been getting the best SWR and the best results on 20 meters. So I made a little mark on my on the tap on the coils, and I put the tap in that little mark there, and it pretty much get me right there on my 20 meters, right between the band where I get the best reception. And then I would run my my counterpoise wire. I have it on a spool. And it's completely mobile, so I can pick it up and take it back out when I get ready. So what I would do is I would just unravel it, and then I would check my SWR. And when I get the best SWR, then I hit the antenna tuner, and I tune everything up. And once everything is tuned up, I'm good to go. I'm locked on 20 meters pretty good. And the station in Hawaii, I threw my call sign out there. They came back with my call, but that was it. I couldn't really get into any conversation or anything like that. So that's the extent of my Hawaii. He did come back with my call sign, but I was not able to engage in any type of conversation. But I talked to Jamaica. Talk coast to coast, and the thing about it is that I'm talking to people, but I can't hear who the other people are or that's out there. They might be able to hear me, but I can't hear everyone. KY6B, KJ4, Zulu Mike Victor, back to you, over.
Yeah, well, that may just very well be propagation in your area at that given time. I don't think I'd lose any sleep on that, Terrence. Well, now we know the rest of the story, Mr. Harvey. Jim, did that answer your question on a counterpoise? Over.
Yes, it does, Gordon, and thank you, Terrence. It really does. I would have been very confused had you not answered it for me, Terrence. Thank you, and thank you, Gordon. Any more comments on the slinky, Gordon? KJ4WKD, back to you, back to KY6B.
No, they do a job. You know, you can compress that slinky and stick it in your briefcase, travel off to Alaska, hang it on the rail of the boat if you're taking one of those tours. Yeah, they work okay. You know, it's a compromise. It's the inductance in that slinky. And the length that you're able to stretch it out that makes it capable of tuning, obviously. So it's not top drawer, but it's certainly usable. I wouldn't use that as a regular antenna, I don't believe, at least on this end. Alpha Charlie, that's Art up there in New York. Are you still with us, Art? And sorry to keep you waiting. Glad you're with us tonight. Over.
K2AAC, Tonawanda, New York here. I have a question. I'm thinking about putting up a copper J-pole on my balcony. And how do I know which direction to put it in? I'm not too sure what direction, and where should I put it on the balcony?
Well, first of all, hi, Art. Glad you're with us. Second of all, a J-pole, I assume you're using this for VHF, probably 2 meters, or maybe it's a 2 meter and 440 J-pole. They're omnidirectional. So wherever you mount it is fine as far as its directionality. I guess I would probably ask the question if, assuming, again, this is 2 meters or 440, you're probably going to want to be working the local repeaters, and I would mount it on the balcony wherever it was open and hopefully viewable in the direction of where the repeater or repeaters are located. Over.
Okay, thanks for that. I also work off of a Wilson, just a 2 meter antenna, Magmount 5/8, with an old ham who was in. He was a ham for 76 years. He was 100 years old when he passed away, but. He told me to put it on a big cookie sheet. So I put it on a cookie sheet, and I've been working like that for 7 years, and I can hit repeaters 50 to 75 miles away with it. So I guess he knew what he was doing. Back to net control, K2AAC.
Yeah, a pizza plate, normally large in size, does a nice job on that. Same thing. You can also put it on top of your refrigerator, Art. The refrigerator acts as the ground plane. If you've got a filing cabinet in the radio room, stick it on the filing cabinet, go whop, you know, with a mag mount, and you're off and running, sir. Over.
I don't have anything in there. The only thing I have is the cookie sheet, so I got that in my back room there. And the refrigerator, the mag mount is way too big. It would break my antenna if I tried to put it up there. But those are the ideas I've heard before. So, but the cookie sheet's working really good, but I'm thinking maybe trying something else down the road. So I just wanted to jump in and say hi to you and everybody else on that also. Back to net control, K2AAC.
All right, very good. Again, nice to have you with us tonight. Any other questions before we move on, please? KY6V and the TNT.
KJ4 is the Mike Victor with question, Gordon.
Go ahead, slugger.
Now, George had said, it sounds like an alligator station. I equate that as being all mouth and no ears. But he heard me. And also Mike... NXI, he heard me. Question, Gordon, where does the 75-meter band fall in at? Because I'm looking at the band plan, the U.S. Amateur Radio bands. I don't see anything in it for 75 meters. And, where is it? Over.
Well, I'm not sure what chart you're looking at, Terrence. KY6V here, but it should be there. We have a frequency chart published in the class material for the outreach study material that I know shows 75 meters. Some people get confused from time to time. 75 and 80 are really synonymous. The band, the 75 and 80 meter band, is so wide. When you calculate, how many meters is this, it's 75 on one end and it's 80 on the overall. So maybe you're looking for 75 and it says 80. Is that a possibility? Over.
Yeah, that'd be it then, because I thought it was a different ban altogether, but I do see it now. Over.
Okay. Well, as soon as you get through with this course here in a couple of weeks, I want to see you down there on that low end in the extra portion, okay?
Roger that. That'd be somewhere around, 3600. So, yeah, I do see the 75 now, the 40 and the 3.5. So, my bad. thanks, Gordon. KY6V, KJ4, Zulu Mike Victor is clear.
All right. Thank you, Slugger. We're 4 minutes into the second hour. I'm going to keep rolling here so that we can cover most of this material tonight. If I get long-winded, Suzanne, pull on my escape chute, and we'll start winding it down. The next note that I had on the program here is how VHF and UHF antennas should be considered as opposed to HF. Susan, you might want to comment on this as we get into it, because you sort of commented on it early in the opening. You know, an antenna and its feed line is an antenna and its feed line, whether or not it's HF or higher. I mean, an antenna is an antenna, a feed line is a feed line. But where the difference starts to come into play is when you move higher and higher in frequency. Yes, the antenna becomes smaller and easier to work with, but the loss factor in your transmission line, in your coax, in your feed line, becomes extremely significant. And this situation will be covered shortly in the other material that we're going to make, but I wanted to make that comment. And Susie, do you want to amplify it in any way, or does that statement bother you? Mademoiselle, please.
Well, yes, Gordon, this is N1SUZ. I do have a comment about that. You know, this may be a little premature to what you're going to cover later, but I'd really like to know, what causes coax to become less effective at higher frequencies? I wonder about that, especially since we use coax quite a bit. Can you answer me that? Back to you, KY6B.
Yeah, I think the design engineers are just trying to give us a bad time. I'm just kidding with that. Thanks, Suzanne. The dielectric of the coax, that's the insulating material, you know, that you normally find between the center conductor and the shield of this round coax that you're dealing with. The dielectric of the coax could be poly material. It could be foam material. It could be air dielectric. Capacity effect is caused is really the main issue here. The capacity of this coax increases with frequency, Suzanne, and it creates losses in your power delivery from point A to point B, being your transmitter to your antenna or vice versa. And the capacity effect and its losses involved are directly related to the dielectric being used, the diameter of the cable, and the length of the cable being used. Now, if you look at the manufacturer's specification for the cable that you may be starting to think about using, it's going to tell you a number of things. It's going to tell you how much power that cable will handle from your transmitter at given frequencies. It will tell you what the loss factor is for given frequencies, and you will find that in the subject that we're dealing with right now, the higher you go in frequency as you start approaching 2 meters and UHF, it can get pretty lossy because of the capacity effect that is taking place between the center conductor and the shield. Does that make sense, Susie? Over.
That certainly does, and I guess that also means that you can buy it in different thicknesses. I think I saw that when we were looking at cable.
Yeah, you certainly can. You know, you can buy it from, I don't know, what is it, quarter inch around, maybe the smallest or a little under a quarter inch possibly, to up including 4 or 6 inch diameter heliacs. And that's some great stuff, but it's very tough to work with. It doesn't bend very easily when you're getting up to that big stuff. And the connectors that you put on, it takes you all day to put one on and do it right. It's But when it's all over, it's great. Absolutely great. Any other questions on what we just discussed, please, or any comments?
Lima, Charlie, Bravo.
Now, here's a guy that's fought some pretty good-sized heliacs. Go ahead, George, LCB, please.
Well, thank you, Gordon. You know, I'm listening about the foam in the air and different types of insulation. And you mentioned velocity, and all that reminds me of, speed as far as the velocity and the different materials that's used to deal with the heat, if this is my understanding of it, as I think the biggest thing, is the heat factor, the insulating of it there, and, a lot of people just doesn't realize that signal is running along the outside of that center conductor, and that's right next to the foam or dielectric or whatever type insulation to use. I thought I might throw a little bit more into about coax, and the heat is the problem, and by using different type of coax, you eliminate that by less breakdown. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
That's a good point, George. KY6V here, you know. For those of us, like you and I and some other people I know, they can run a California kilowatt. And if you guys don't know and gals don't know what a California kilowatt is, ask George. We can put some heat through that baby. We can melt that coax if it's not rated to handle what we're throwing to it. But George also raises a good point on velocity, and I don't think I touched on that. But the velocity factor is very important, and we're going to get into that a little bit if the program timing allows us to get into it tonight. If not, we'll do it another time. But when you're calculating an electrical half wave of a piece of coax, you have to know what the velocity factor is of that coax to come up with the right dimension. And velocity is the time it takes the signal to progress across that half wave length of coax. And it's determined by the dielectric. It's determined by this insulation between the center conductor and the shield. So polyethylene, which is sort of that, plastic solid type insulation, has a velocity factor of 0.66, 66%, okay? Now you move up to foam, this white stuff, when you look in the end of this coax. It's got a velocity factor, speaking from memory, I think of about 80%, about 0.80. And then air is even different there. So velocity becomes very important when you have to determine, and there will be times that you will need to determine what an electrical half wave is on your coax, and we'll get into that as soon as we can. Any other questions on that point, please? All right, we're 13 minutes into the hour. This is KY6V. This is the TNT Open Forum Thursday night. And tonight we're talking about antennas and peripheral side effects thereto. My next note reads, do you want a local omni coverage? And we're still in the VHF-UHF range, okay? Do you want local omni coverage, or do you want to reach out and really touch somebody? Now, if you would be satisfied with just local coverage and the use of local repeaters and an omnidirectional antenna with good coax, mounted 25, maybe 50 feet above ground, will do you very, very well. If you are not planning on working single sideband on either the VHF or UHF bands, and your mode will be FM, a vertical antenna such as a J-pole. Hello, Art. We're back into J-poles. Or a diamond gain vertical or a Wilson 5/8, you know, will do very nicely for you. The reason that I mentioned single sideband, it is the chosen polarization for sideband on VHF and UHF to be horizontally polarized and not vertical, and that becomes very important at that frequency range. There's at 2 meters, speaking from memory, about 26 dB difference in signal levels between vertical and horizontal. So if you're going to work sideband, make sure you're horizontal, and if you're going to work FM, make sure you're vertical. Now, if you really want to reach out and talk with somebody, let me buy a nickel, or I'll be talking to myself. It's time to look at a beam antenna, and again, with good coax. Beams require a rotator and a control box in your shack. Come in all kinds of configurations. You know, you can buy a 3-element beam, a 5-element beam, an 11-element beam, a 15-element beam, and on it goes. The more elements, the higher gain off your antenna will be found, and further the front-to-back ratio will also increase. And there's some other good alternatives to Yagis. You know, instead of a Yagi, you can go to a cubicle quad type design, which is also very effective and gives you about the same play for your money. And if you're not familiar with cubicle quads, you can search that on Google or your favorite search engine and sort of go from there. Jim, what are you using up there in North Carolina? And any comments on this sector so far? WKD, please. Over.
Yes, sir. KJ4WKD here. And I'm using a G5RV Junior and on HF. And I have a dual band J-pole, 2 meter and 440, mounted actually higher than my dipole on top of the chimney, about 50 feet in there, I guess. And it works really, really well. So, I use a, I'm following into lockstep with what you said. I'm using a horizontal for HF and vertical J-pole for VHF, UHF. But my next question, and it's probably already been covered, but it's a question I'd written down to ask tonight, and we're into more little other area. But my question is, why does a beam antenna give me more bang for the buck? And that would refer to VHF, UHF as well. You know, should I have that rather than my J-pole? Back to you, sir.
Good question. Thanks, Jim. KY6V here. Well, again, depends on what you want to do, Jim. If you're satisfied with, and your main communication is with the repeaters and maybe some simplex activity locally, and that's working out fine for you, then you don't need a beam. If you want to stretch out the magical radio horizon and talk to the next city over, which you probably won't be able to do on your J-pole if it's beyond, let's say, 26 or 27 miles, then a beam is going to get you there. Now, a beam is normally made of parasitic elements. I think we touched on this earlier. These consist of elements called directors and a reflector and a driven element. And the combination and placement of these elements force the radiation, radiated signal, if you will, to only go in one direction, the direction you want it to go in. and further supplies gain in that direction. So depending on the number of elements involved, one can gain, as I mentioned earlier, I think, 8, 13, 15 dB gain in the direction that the beam is pointing. And remember, this is a heck of a wallop, a heck of a wallop, because 3 dB doubles your power, and we're talking a max here of maybe 15 dB. So you figure the math on that. If 3 dB doubles your power and also equates to 1S unit on your receiver, you are sending out one lollapalooza to this city over on the other side of the horizon. How about that, Jim? Over.
That works for me. And tell you the truth, I'm not a big 2-meter, and it's mostly we have. I work the 2-meter repeater here. That's just for local conversation, and no problem. And we do have one about 30 miles away, which I can hit and talk with. And there's a net there, and I haven't done it in a couple of months actually. But I'm more concerned about HF, and I'm really happy with my J-pole. And I have a little amp that I can put on the HT, which is all I have for high frequency. I've got a very high in UHF. I can amplify that and put it up in the air. And by the way, and thanks to you, I have the proper clicks on the BHF and the UHF. Thanks for you for setting me straight and letting me know that I couldn't use RG8X for those frequencies. So I'm happy with that. And one day I want to have a beam, a Yagi, for say 20 meters or whatever. Maybe I won't have a 160 meter Yagi like Susie's looking forward to, but I will have a 20 hopefully at some point up in the air. And thank you. Back to you, KY63. This is KJ4WKD.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Susie's talking about a rotatable beam on 160. Susie, I want to hear this story. Let me think about this. 160 meters. A half wave is roughly 240 feet. So that's 120 feet either side of your boom. How do you keep it from sagging? We'll find this one out later. Okay, I'm going to move on here. We're 22 minutes into it, and I think I'm going to try and wrap it here, even if we have to cut it short at about 30 minutes after the hour. That'll give us an hour and a half. But we'll talk with the boss, Susie, over there and see how she wants to do it. The next footnote I have is the importance of efficiency in your antenna and feed line construction. And we're going to come right back to what you were saying about RG8X in just a secundo, Jim. Assuming that the antenna has been assembled in keeping with commercial standards, we must now make sure that the feed line is of the proper type and connected properly to the antenna with appropriate weatherproofing utilized. Weatherproofing is very, very important, guys and gals, and we'll touch on that. The coax is the important thing here. First, it should exhibit the lowest loss possible at your operating frequency, and its power rating will handle what you intend to transmit through it. Consult the coax manufacturing specification on the line you are thinking about using. And some examples that really scare you guys to death, and gals too. I want you to think about this. If you were to pick for 2-meter or 440 operation, RG58 or RG8X, and that's what Jim just mentioned, you're going to find that you have 6 dB loss per 100 feet when used on 2 meters, and double that when it's used on 440. Now, what this means is that you are losing 75% of your power being transmitted before it even gets to your antenna. And it further means that you're losing 75% of the incoming receive signal before it even reaches your receiver. Bozo, no, no. Don't use that kind of stuff at these operating frequencies or you'll be talking to a dummy load. Now, RG8, RG213, if some of you are familiar with those coaxes, have a loss of about 3 dB. That's half power at 100 feet at these frequencies. 9913 has a loss of about 2.1 dB. And then when you get into half-inch heliacs, or better yet, 7/8 heliacs, things really start looking good. So, let's see if we have any questions out there. Kathy, you're being awfully quiet. You haven't gone to sleep on us. Do you have anything you'd like to add here, please? Over.
This is Kilo 6 Sierra, United November. No, Gordon, I'm going to sleep. Very interesting program. But, you know, one question I have, you and I and a lot of other people live in South Florida or Central Florida where there's a lot of moisture, a lot of humidity. And so why is moisture protection so important at these connection points? And maybe you can talk about humidity. Is the humidity going to affect these connection points as well? And this is especially for you and I down here in Florida who have a lot of moisture, a lot of rain, and hurricanes. So maybe you can explain that question to us in the audience. Kilo 6 Sierra United November, back to KY6V. I am going.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. I had to sit back and smile. You know, George is here down with us also. I thought Jack would be with us tonight. Sorry he couldn't make it. But we all know about humidity and water and moisture and what have you. And I was smiling when you said, would you talk about humidity? And I was thinking, combining that with the hot air that you and I and George and the rest of us can produce down here, I mean, it can become a real big problem. But at any rate, guys and gals, water can be one of your worst enemies within an antenna system. And I want you to remember this. Water that forms across your center conductor and the ground or shield side of your coax can form a resistance path that causes a change in your antenna and coax impedance to cause an increase in your SWR. Now, let me take this a little further. Some dielectrics are more prone to this than others. This poly is not bad because you can't saturate the poly plastic spacing too readily. However, if you're using a foam dielectric, that stuff gets impregnated with the water. It seems to last forever. I've even used a hairdryer on the doggone thing trying to dry it out, and it takes forever to get it back to normal. And the air dielectric is just as bad because what happens is there's no fill space in here. You know, there's no solid material between the center conductor and the shield. There's this spiral plastic that runs down through the coax. And so the water that seeps in through your connector, it'll get in on the ends of the coax, one side or the other. Normally on the antenna side because it's exposed outside. But nevertheless, that water starts dribbling down into your coax. And then if you got a loop at the bottom before it gets into your shack, this water starts to accumulate. I'll tell you a quick story here if you allow me to buy a nickel. Stand by. We had a diversity feed studio to transmitter link at a station that I put in TV-wise in St. Petersburg, Florida. We had two runs of 7/8 heliacs coming down from the parabolic dishes to the equipment inside the building. Came off the tower. This particular tower, as I recall, was 1,539 feet high. So at any rate, our dishes were up, 300 or 400 feet up on this tower. So the coax came down and it looped across what we call the coax tray, and then on into the building. Well, one of these connectors went porous on us and started taking water. Now, how do you dry something out like that? And I decided, I said, I've got to get this installation going. I can't run on just one antenna. And there were a lot of reasons for that. I took out a ice pick and a ladder, and I walked outside. And where this coax came in and looped at its lowest point and then across the cable tray to the building, I went in and I poked a hole right through the outside covering. Yeah, it wasn't very big, you know, an ice pick's not that big around. Right through the shield, and right into the center of that, and it just started spruing water, and when it drained itself out, the system worked great. So, any comments, any questions on what we're talking about? Keep water out of your system. Over.
Zulu Mike Victor.
Oh, you don't have that problem up there. Incidentally, did Lee get up in your neck of the woods, Terrence? Over.
Negative. Not yet. We're just getting a little bit of moisture right now. It's not much, though. Temperatures have leveled out. It's about maybe 70, 72, 60, 65 early this morning, up to a high about 72 degrees. So it's been very comfortable with overcast skies. Question. Now, you guys are down there, Gordon, with all that ocean, the big old Atlantic. So what do you guys do for the salt corrosion that could happen to your antenna, especially the aluminum type Yagis? And you know, do you have to bring them down at a certain time and maybe clean them up, or you know, because I'm under the impression that salt corrodes. And how do you guys protect from the salt corrosion? I know the water is bad, too, but salt could also be bad. Over.
Well, actually, Terrence, I'll let George comment on that, too, and I hope you're still there, George. You know, the materials that we use are not affected by salt that much. You know, a lot of our stuff is galvanized, hot-dip galvanized, aluminum. Such as used in beam antennas, may get a little pitted after years of this salt spray. I've found that periodically, if necessary, and things are starting to look a little raunchy, it doesn't really do much to the operation, these little pits. I spray the antenna, the aluminum antennas, and I'm talking the VHF and UHF guys, with some WD-40. It shines them right up, gets everything looking pretty nice, and gives it a little longevity. George, you have any comments on that, LCB, please?
No, not a whole lot more, Gordon. You know, periodically, you know, I'll climb the tower and check everything over, make sure I don't have any leaks at the connections or anything, and like you said, a little bit of discoloration, but, you know, every once in a while we'll pull it down and just go through the whole thing again. When I did run beams and a sort, you know, that was a yearly type thing, or one that was round to it. But what concerns me more is chemicals that's coming out of these different plants that I think does more damage than the salt environment that we have here. So I think, like I said, I think they do more damage. You know, when I lived up north, and the furthest north is Kentucky, used to get a lot of a dropout from the different factories within the area. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think, thanks, George. Terrence, I know you love to fish down here. When you move down here, you'll figure this all out yourself, won't you, sir? Over.
Roger on that, Gordon. You know, it is on the bucket list, I tell you. I do like Florida, you know. I don't know how I'm going to get used to the heat, though. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and, you know, I kind of like it when it's a little cool, too. So, but I like the fish. I was thinking about Alaska. Back to you, Gordon.
I'm not sure that it's fun to fish up in Alaska. You know, Doug, KA0GYF, one of our senior sysops here with Southcars, he and his bride, Marilyn, are, well, they're in Seattle here today, but they've spent the last week up in Alaska. And he's been communicating and sending pictures and what have. And Terrence, he says, you know, no matter where I go up here, if there's a little stream running next to the road, I can stop the car, walk over to the stream, see these little fins splashing around. I can reach in and pull myself out a fish, a salmon. He says, it's just too blooming easy, Terrence. Over.
That's life. I tell you, that's life in the Merry Lane. I would love to be able to do that. Yeah, I love salmon fishing. Man, it's awesome. I did it a little bit in Washington State, and God, I love it there too. Nice, beautiful. Only thing about Washington State though is the dampness and all of that. But hey, we were talking to Doug the other day there when we was doing the topic on the dogs. And Doug and his wife was vacationing in Alaska. He is getting around. Where is he going from there, over?
Well, I think it's coming to an end, Terrence. KY6V here. They're spending about 3 days. I think this is the first day in Seattle. He went up and had lunch at the Top of the Needle today, according to the email I got latter part of the day here, early evening, I guess. And they're going to do some sightseeing, and then they're going to pick up that pony in the sky and fly back to Florida and figure out what they're going to do next year, I guess. All right, Terrence, I'm going to break at this point. I want to reconnoiter with Suzanne here for a moment. Suzanne, we're 37 minutes into the second hour. We have a number of subjects yet to cover, and I'm not sure that we should do it this evening because of the lateness of time. We wanted to talk about height considerations. We wanted to talk about SWR, which is very important, and how to read it. We wanted to talk about lightning considerations and proper grounding and quick disconnects and that kind of thing. And obviously safety. If you can give me permission to make an override on those subjects very quickly, I can probably do it in about 5 minutes and point out where this information can be found. And then we can continue this on another TNT at some point or post some of the material on the breaking news or on our website. Or do all kinds of wonderful things. What do you want to do, Susie? KY6V, over.
Well, thank you, Gordon. This is N1SUZ. Well, Gordon, that would be really up to you. But may I suggest that we do have next Thursday evening open on TNT that I was going to replace something with. And you have such a wealth of information, and the net is going so well. I would say maybe a part two next Thursday if you're up for it. If not, whatever you'd like to do, but a part two probably would be a really good addition to our TNT. So what say you, sir?
Well, I hate to be the fly in the ointment, but I have an engagement next Thursday, and I just won't be available. Maybe we can do it further down the line. But that doesn't fit at the moment unless something changes. Over.
Well, okay, Gordon. Yeah, because I know you won't be available for another couple weeks there. So we could actually make that part two sometime in October, if you're up for it. And maybe you can wrap it up tonight a little bit, and we could do the part two in October. What do you say to that?
That'll be fine. Don't have any problems with that at all. Thank you, Suzanne. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all those ships out at sea, Gordon here, KY6V, TNT open forum this evening on antennas. We're going to start wrapping it up. I'm going to tell you some of the subject matter we wanted to get into, but it's just getting a little bit too late, and we will pick this up in phase two, apparently in October sometime, possibly. But we'll keep you all posted on that. I wanted to talk about height considerations tonight. The higher the better, guys. You know, get your antenna up just as far as practical for a lot of reasons, particularly in the VHF, UHF area, and for a lot of reasons on HF, too. You want to get away from the ground effect, and you don't want signals bouncing off of your back lawn that go back up and bother the pattern of your antenna or cancel its radiation, and all of that is possible. I wanted to talk about SWR and reading it correctly. I'm going to plant a seed here. There are only two places that you can read your SWR properly and accurately. One is to place your SWR in series with your coax right at the antenna feed point. That's not very practical when this baby's up 200 feet in the air. The other one is to use multiples, even multiples, of half-wave transmission lines, electrically calculated, so that when you read the SWR down at your transmitter in the shack, you are reading the SWR that is exactly what the antenna is seeing at whatever height it may be. This particular subject is covered in a document called Back to Basics. It's on our website. It's in the downloadable material. If you don't want to wait for phase two here on antennas, you can take a look at that. It's pretty well documented as to why, the wherefores, and the not-to-dos type department. Okay, I wanted to talk about lightning. We'll get into that also. There's some tricks about properly grounding your tower, how to go about it, grounding your equipment, how to go about it, how to get out of Dodge in a hurry when a lightning storm's right over the top of you, and you don't want to be disconnecting coaxes at that point because you don't know when your hair is going to go straight up on the back of your head. There's some quick disconnect connectors we'll be talking about for rapid disconnect and throw the baby out the window type thing when the storm comes to get you. And we'll be talking about safety, power lines, using your noggin, common sense, things to consider before you even put your first step on the tower. Hope George will be part of that too, because he's a old-time excellent tower climber. With that, is it time for donuts and coffee, Mademoiselle? N1SUZ, KY6V, and hopefully the multitude. Over.
Yes, it's time for coffee and donuts. Everyone can come over to my house. And I will serve up some great stuff. But thank you, Gordon. And it's been a wonderful net and really informative. And I'm glad that we're going to have a part two, because I wouldn't want to rush through the rest of this material. It's too important, and it really is a help for all of us newbies out there who don't quite know all there is to know about antennas. And thank you so much for your expertise. I'll send it back to you for any further final comments, and then I will wrap it up at your leisure. N1SUZ, back to KY6V.
All right. I see. I'm sorry. I'm not very attentive guys and gals through the text box with everything that's going on here. But Rob down in Deltona, ZFM. Gordon, can you email me the dates, please? Do you have voice? Can you explain that question a little further for me, Rob? Over.
Yeah, Gordon. I came in here very late. I was listening to you guys winding it down out there. It's my first chance keying in. I didn't even know if you had seen. I've been here texting in the box for a little bit anyway. But I just wanted to know so I don't miss the next session. I mean, that's my area right there. I want to get into that.
All right, we'll work something out. We try to get this information posted when we can on our website, too. I don't know if you look at that very often, but that's normally where we try to get information out to the membership. But I will do my best, Rob, to get you notified once that date has been set. Well, thank you very much, Susie, for your nice compliments and allowing me to discuss one of my favorites in the hobby. There's a lot of aspects of amateur radio and electronics that I enjoy very much, and I would say that antennas are probably right up at the top of the pile. I would only ask that when you are ready to officially sever ties for this evening, that you run the flag up the flagpole. Give me a heads up. I've got three computers recording here so that I cut the recordings at a proper point and we don't have any editing to do. Susie, KY6V, back to you. Over.
This is N1SUZ. Of course, Gordon, I will officially let you know when we're cutting the cord. We've got a few little points of business before we go on. First, I want to ask George, KW4LCB, if he wants to come aboard and wish anyone a happy birthday tonight. George, would you like to do that?
No, Suzanne. Gordon was relating that he's tied up next week, and I will be too. It's Miss Katie's birthday, and I thought we'd just get out and do whatever comes natural. So that was that reference right there.
Well, very good, George. I just wanted to make sure you had an opportunity and give us all an opportunity. So, with that said, let me do some announcements before we go on, and everybody can enjoy these. First of all, NCS and administration people are needed. Please contact us at voip@southcars.com. Worldwide hospitality people are required to act as South Cars ambassadors of goodwill. For further information, please contact us at voip@southcars.com. Now about the South Cars Outreach 2011 program. Technician license classes were completed on June 5th, and general upgrade classes were completed earlier this year. Recordings of all the sessions may be found at www.voip.southcars.com. Navigate from the SCARS download link. Extra class upgrade classes began on August 7, 2011, are going to conclude on September 13, 2011. Classes are being held on Sunday and Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Some enrolled students have already passed their extra exams. Congratulations to those who have. As with all of our licensing courses, recordings of all sessions are online at www.voip.southcars.com for easy access whenever you are ready for that upgrade. And an International Morse Code class is scheduled to be presented during the first quarter of 2012, so keep your eyes open for that one. See www.voip.southcars.com for further information on all these topics. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information can be found on the voip.southcars.com website. Your net control for this station has been Suzanne, N1SUZ, that's me. And I'm saying 73s and closing this VOIP session. thank you for your participation, and thank you, Gordon, so much for coming aboard and teaching us all about antennas. I am now officially closing this net. And Gordon, you can cut the recording button. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.